Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
Started to burn too many things we found. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman coming to you with another hour here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at PRN. We have something beyond infuriating to talk about today. I'm going to have trouble containing my language. About the Ohio referendum situation and the bailout in Ohio and the nuclear plants. We have Pat Morita from Ohio. Pat, you with us from Ohio Sierra?
Hi, Harvey. Yes, I'm here.
Pat, great to have you with us. Kevin Camps from Beyond Nuclear. Kevin, are you on the phone?
Hi, Harvey. Thanks for having me.
And Donna Gilmore here from near me in California. Donna, are you with us? Donna Gilmore? Okay, she may join us late, so I will email her. So, folks, listen, what we're going to talk about today is about as serious as it can possibly get in anything resembling a democracy. And I will lay this out, and Kevin and Pat, you are totally enmeshed in this situation. And I would say that in all the years that I have been campaigning on the nuclear issue dating back to 1973. What is it? How many? I can't even count that high. 46 years now. This is the most serious incident that I have encountered in all these years, both as a safe energy activist and as a citizen of the United States who actually has read the Bill of Rights. So, Pat, let me have you do the setup, you and Kevin, because I'm gonna go really nuts here. What is happening in Ohio with AB6 and the proposed bailout for the Perry and Davis Bessie nuclear plants, along with two coal-burning power plants? And what is now happening with the referendum to repeal this bailout? Pat, do you want to start us off from Columbus?
Sure. So I chair the Nuclear Free Committee at the Ohio Sierra Club. So House Bill 6 passed with the nuclear bailout, nuclear and coal bailout, which also deep-sixed renewables and efficiency. That passed on July 23rd. And rather surprisingly, because it's really hard to collect enough signatures to overturn an Ohio House bill, there was a group funded by the gas company, actually, called Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts. And they formed, and they, anyway, it was August 30th that they finally got an okay to start collecting signatures because their first ballot language was denied on 21 counts. Anyway, they have to now collect 266,000 signatures in 44 counties across Ohio, and they have until October 21st to do it. So it's really important. We want to get out there and collect these signatures. But I'm not sure that this group really is, I don't know how much experience they've had with doing this. But come to find out, there's a group called Generation Now that is a dark money group that's been funded by First Energy, and they have hired petition spoilers, if you will, people to go out and talk people out of signing the petitions. And I would suppose that I don't know, but if I were a person that knew nothing about an issue and somebody came up and told me not to sign a petition, that would give me pause. So I'll let Kevin chime in from here.
All right, Kevin, you want to jump in, and then I'll add to this?
Yeah, Pat's done a great job. So just to show how badly the gloves are off, and again, it's First Energy, but it's other nuclear power industry proponents who are behind all these shenanigans. It was shenanigans to get it past the Ohio House in the first place. That was through campaign contributions that were, you know, highly orchestrated, the best democracy money can buy. And now to defend their outrageous $1.1 billion bailout, they are not just knocking on doors. They are not just going to public spaces where they expect to find petition gatherers and try to talk people out of it. It's actually beyond borderline harassment and intimidation. There's video documentation from Columbus, I believe, or no, Dublin, Ohio, where a blocker hired by pro-nuclear advocates is physical with a petition gatherer. So the full disclosure story is the petition gatherer was taking a photo of the person who was trying to block petitions from being signed. But how did the blocker respond? She struck the person and damaged his phone, broke his phone into pieces. And when he bent down to try to pick up his phone and to pick up one of the postcards, perhaps, that she dropped when she struck him, she physically body blocked him. So it's now, you know, in this one incident at least, it's a physical assault by pro-bailout people. But I think, you know, judging by the television ads that have also run, which are really absurd on one level, but also, like was said, if you don't know about this issue and you don't know what's going on, it's very frightening. So what they put forward in these TV ads is that Red China, and really its military, is marching on Ohio and has shut down factories, has shut down production, manufacturing, and now wants to shut down Ohio's energy. And it's a minute-long ad full of images of the Chinese military and the Chinese Communist Party leadership doing their thing in China, which is not a good thing, but what they're implying, more than implying, is that that's going to come to Ohio if these petition signers get you to sign their petition, even to the point of warning people they're going to take your name, they're going to take your signature, they're going to take down your address, and the implication is they're going to know where you are. Red China is going to know where you live. And what's so absurd is the very tiny kernel of truth behind the ad, and it's not really true, is they're trying to say, oh, the natural gas company that's opposed to this nuclear and coal bailout got financing from Red China. Well, as has been documented by newspapers in Ohio, so has First Energy. So has most of U.S. business. They get loans from China. It happens every day. It happens every nanosecond. But in addition to the Chinese financing for this natural gas plant in Lordstown, they also got British and French and German and Australian financing. So there's nothing out of the ordinary going on with the Chinese financing. And what is going on, though, is because coal and nuclear has been bailed out to the tune of $1.1 billion at the expense of Ohio electricity ratepayers, one of the add-ons to the the natural gas plant is not going to happen now. So a significant job loss in Lordstown, significant loss of revenues that the schools and other public institutions were counting on happening because First Energy is having its way in Ohio.
All right, so let me now, if I can keep myself calm enough, lay out this whole situation. You guys are both great, Pat and Kevin. I don't know if Donna has joined us. She may have misunderstood the time. Donna Gilmore. Okay, so let's proceed here. And let's take it from the beginning. Now, we've had this on the show before, but the bottom line is this. The Perry and Davis Vesey nuclear power plants on the lake. Perry is 35 miles east of Cleveland, and Davis Vesey is closer to Toledo in a town called Oak Harbor. These two reactors are absolutely hunks of rusted radioactive junk. They are incredibly dangerous, very, very old. Perry is over 30 years old, Davis Vesey is more than 40 years old. Perry actually came online just as the Challenger blew up. Perry is also the first commercial atomic reactor in the United States to be damaged by an earthquake. And Davis Bessie is infamous worldwide for having its head eaten through by boric acid and coming within less than an inch of a Chernobyl on Lake Erie. So these are the two reactors we're dealing with. Now, First Energy, which is a mob operation based in Akron. I mean, it is just organized crime at its peak. This company has been trying for years to get forced to pay ratepayers, the taxpayers of the state, of the feds, whoever they can, to bail out these two reactors so they can continue to operate them without private insurance, with no real regulation from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which is now a Trump agency. Three of the five commissioners on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission are Trump appointees, which means it's basically a non-existent as a regulatory agency. It's always been a rubber stamp, and now it's worse than ever. So there is no real, meaningful, impactful regulation going on at Perry, Davis Bessie, or any other nuclear plant reactor in the United States, which are now numbering, is it 96? Is TMI Unit 1 shut, Kevin? Is it officially down?
Not quite yet. By the end of this month.
All right. So we have 97, and by the end of September, it'll be 96, hopefully. So these two incredibly dangerous reactors, which are big money losers, absolutely no reason in any way, shape, or form for these two reactors to continue to operate. Not economically, certainly not ecologically, certainly not in terms of health and safety. There are a couple thousand union workers. They were union workers, and I'll get to that in a minute. And Patton and Kevin, jump in on me and correct me if I say anything wrong here, but I want to lay out this entire scenario. That's one of the advantages of having an hour show, is that we can do this in depth, okay? So these two reactors, one of which almost blew up in 2003, when the boric acid ate through Davis Bessie's head, one of which was hit by an earthquake, the first one in the U.S. in the mid-1980s. Thankfully, it wasn't operating at the time, but the NRC didn't care, and no major precautions have been taken to protect Perry from a further earthquake impact, just like Diablo Canyon here in California. Nonetheless, these two reactors have proceeded. Now, First Energy is in bankruptcy, and this Toledo-based company, which took over a whole bunch of other, I'm sorry, Akron-based company, which took over a whole bunch of other utility companies along the way. But thankfully not the Cleveland Municipal Utility, which Dennis Kucinich, as mayor of Cleveland, protected from First Energy. And that has had a major impact and continues to have a major impact, not only in Ohio, but worldwide. And we'll get to that because we're going to talk about wind power in Ohio. So First Energy, which is a completely corrupt operation, these top seven executives at First Energy and its various affiliates are paid $25 million a year. The CEO of First Energy, a guy named Chuck Jones, obviously a real genius because he's run his company into bankruptcy, is paid $9.5 million a year. One guy. So over the past years, they have done all sorts of shenanigans to try and get bailed out by the state of Ohio, by the FERC, by Donald Trump. Whoever will hand them money, they want to hand them money and keep these two reactors operating. Now, I want to give you a backdrop here. And this, again, it gets complicated, and it takes a while, but this is incredibly important for everybody to know, as both Pat and Kevin are well aware. There is a tremendous wind resource in northern Ohio, especially in northwestern Ohio, along what we call the North Coast. The winds are strong and steady as they come off the lake. Now, they're not as powerful as the winds that blow through the Great Plains from the Texas Panhandle up to Minnesota and North Dakota. But these are good, strong winds and a very well-known, very well-measured, a known quantity. And the land along the North Coast is flat. And the farmers in the North Coast region, and I know because I actually had a stint of trying to sell windmills. And I went up there and I talked to farmers, and they all want these windmills. You know, you got 1,000 acres. You stick a few machines on your 1,000 acres, you lose virtually no farmland. I mean, the footprint of a large commercial wind tower is less than, well under an acre. And you can make a ton of money if just by plunking down a commercial size wind power, wind machine on your farm. And these farmers are desperate for that income. And in addition, then what makes the North Coast so great for wind is that there's a lot of transmission. You won't have to build much transmission. The whole place, and that's a key problem in the Great Plains, but the whole North Coast of Ohio is crisscrossed with transmission lines. So it's not a problem. And the wind sites up there are very close to the urban areas, Toledo, Detroit, Cleveland, Ashtabula, Erie, and around up to the Canadian cities, Toronto, and so on. So in 2000, and Pat, it was in 2014 that they put the setback clause, do you know offhand? Pat Morita?
I think it was earlier than that. Kevin, do you remember?
Okay. Well, at any rate, the geniuses in the Ohio legislature, and maybe you're familiar, you know about, I don't know if you know the date. I think it was 2014, but I may be wrong. Wrote into the Ohio Code a single sentence. And this is one of the most expensive sentences ever written in world history. And in this sentence that they said that all wind commercial windmills have to be basically a quarter mile from the nearest structure or from the road, the nearest road, which is absolutely basically abolishes the ability to do commercial wind power in northern Ohio. Because it just kills, you know, you got 1,000 acres, you know, it limits the number of machines that you can put on by a very significant fraction. So, and the sole purpose of this setback clause was to prevent wind power from coming into northern Ohio. And Kevin, you're well aware, of course, that all of the energy, all of the electricity that's being provided by Perry and Davis Bessie could in fact come from windmills along the North Coast, right? I mean,
we actually had a contention in our challenge against Davis Bessie's 20-year license extension. Davis Bessie would have had to shut down in 2017 on Earth Day, ironically, except it got 20 more years from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And a contention that we won a hearing for, which is very hard to do. It's hard to win hearings on the merits of contentions in the NRC system. But we did. The Atomic Safety and Licensing Board wanted to hear more about our allegation, our contention, that wind power could easily replace Davis Bessie. And we even had a solar expert, Al Campan, emeritus professor at the University of Toledo, a solar expert and entrepreneur, who said the same thing about solar. And certainly the two together could do it quite easily. And so the licensing board said, yes, please, we want to hold a hearing on this and hear more about this. And the company, First Energy, appealed to the NRC Commission, and the NRC Commission said, nope, we overturned the licensing board. There will be no hearing on this contention. What's your next contention? So, NRC has long been a rubber stamp for industry, except these days it's worse than ever.
Well, so this is what we know. This is what we call nuclear fascism. And, you know, it sounds like an extreme term, but we're going to get to what's going on in Ohio, which I consider incredibly serious. I mean, this is just, okay, so let's move on. So we have established that with wind power on the land in the North Coast, and it's beautiful land, and I've been there, it's flat, and, you know, extremely productive land, and the morons and the liars from the nuclear industry like to say that windmills, you know, take up, you know, thousands and thousands of acres. And in fact, what happened, the reality is if you have thousands and thousands of acres and you put in hundreds and hundreds of windmills, you lose virtually no land. I mean, you know, 5% at most. In many cases, I've been to places in Minnesota where they bulldoze a road. They don't pave it to bring in the equipment. You know, they level a road so you can bring in the equipment. They stick the turbine, they stick the pole in the ground, and then they leave it and they walk away and they plant corn and beans and squash and now hemp right up to the tower. And they don't even waste any land on a road because they figure, okay, if something goes wrong with a windmill, you know, turbine, which doesn't happen very often, but if something goes wrong, they'll just, you know, ride up and they'll ride over the corn because it's not all that much corn. They don't even need a road up to the base of the tower. And I've been to the base of many of these towers, and it is, even the biggest of the commercial wind turbine towers these days takes up less than an acre. And so you put a hundred turbines on a 1,000-acre plot, and you're going to lose, you know, well under 10%, more like 5% of the land. It's ridiculous. And whenever you hear someone saying that wind power is impractical because it takes up too much land, you know they're a liar and they're working for the industry. Okay, so we have in Ohio a situation where Perry and Davis Pessy, these two obsolete, about-to-blow-up reactors, can be completely replaced with windmills, wind turbines on the land. Now that doesn't, I'm getting an echo here, by the way, in the studio. Maybe it's just me. That doesn't even talk about the wind power in the lake. Now, it happens that Lake Erie, the middle of Lake Erie, is probably the best offshore wind site in the world for a number of basic reasons. Number one, being it's fresh water. And even at this point in time, turbine manufacturers who are running wind farms in salt water, in the North Sea, in the North Atlantic, primarily at this point in time, soon hopefully off the American coast of New England, salt is still a problem. Corrosion is really very, very difficult to deal with, even at this stage of the game. But not in Lake Erie. Lake Erie is fresh water. And if you look at the wind maps, you can see that the in the middle of Lake Erie is about as strong as the winds get forever. Pat, have you at the Sierra Club looked at the offshore wind capacity for Ohio?
Yes, the Sierra Club has looked at it. The Sierra Club definitely supports the efforts to build there. However, we do think that onshore wind right now is less expensive, but there is definitely an enormous potential for both onshore and offshore wind.
And Kevin, have you looked at the potential wind sites in Lake Erie?
Well, I can give a data point that'll give people some idea of the scale you're talking about, Harvey, but it comes from Michigan right next door. So Governor Granholm, this was 10, 15 years ago, during her administration, the Michigan State University Land Use Institute looked at the Great Lakes available to the state of Michigan for offshore wind development. And they came up with a figure, I'm trying to remember it, I think it was well over 300,000 megawatts electric potential. And what Granholm did with that information was, that would be putting in, you know, a lot of as many wind turbines as possible to capture all that wind potential. what she did is she said, hey, there have to be some criteria. So, for example, in Lake Erie, one of the very important criteria would be there is a flyway down Point Pelee and the islands in Lake Erie that butterflies use, that birds use. So that part of the lake is going to have to be off limits to wind to protect these migrating species. But to the east of that, the species do not migrate across that part of Lake Erie because it's too much open water. They want to stay over the land as much as they can. So they do that at Point Pelee and the islands. And so you can see what Granholm found applying 25 criteria in the Great Lakes to protect the environment, to protect people in all sorts of ways, including fish hatching grounds. They came up with some regions that would be ideal. And those included, for Michigan, the extreme southern Lake Michigan, extreme northern Lake Michigan, and the part of Saginaw Bay that opens up into Lake Huron. Those would be ideal places, and they would still provide many thousands of megawatts of wind power, avoiding all other, you know, environmental and other impacts altogether. So that
right.
kind of work could be done in Lake Erie.
Right. Now, the one complication with fresh water is you do get ice. And it can bump up against the towers, and it requires certain protections. And as Pat mentioned, it is cheaper up front to establish wind turbines, to install wind turbines on land, than it is in the water. Lake Erie is relatively shallow, which is a plus, although they're devising now wind turbines offshore that don't need to be drilled into the to the bottom. In other words, they're flotational, so it's a different dynamic. But the shallowness of Lake Erie is also a plus. And of course, these sites are relatively close again to urban areas. You put windmills in the middle of Lake Erie, you're going to be able to supply Detroit, Toledo, Cleveland, Ashtabula, Toronto, you know, Erie. Around the shore of the lake. So I get in trouble when I say infinite, but there is basically more than enough wind capacity, both onshore and offshore, in the territories of Ohio, with availability of power to Ohio urban areas to supplant Perry and Davis Bessie. And of course, now they say, well, when the wind doesn't blow, blah, 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 we have advanced battery technologies. We do have solar, and we also have the rise of LED efficiency. So, and we're getting to the point now, and this is a key thing to discuss, Pat and Kevin, is that the industry, and we don't see this much anymore, the nuclear industry has always argued that nuclear is uniquely important because it provides baseload power, which means that the reactors always operate. Well, now in the more advanced computerized economies, it turns out base load is actually a negative because the fluctuation, and this is especially true at Diablo Canyon here in California, because the demand fluctuates to the point that we really don't need base load power at many times a day. And what's happening in California now is that when the wind is really whooping and the sun is really shining and people are conserving electricity, the Diablo is putting too much electricity online, and they're forcing the much cheaper and cleaner wind and solar stuff to shut down. And I'm sure that'll be a factor in Ohio. Pat, have you followed that at all? Have you seen that come up in Ohio at all?
Also, distributed energy is... It just makes more sense. You don't have an entire northwest of the United States going dark because of what First Energy Solutions has not trimmed their trees. and also that makes local jobs. It distributes the jobs. You don't have a company town and so forth. So,
all right. Kevin, you want to jump in on that?
Yep. You know, countries like Germany are showing the way, and they are phasing out nuclear by 2022. They're largely phasing out fossil fuel combustion, at least the greenhouse gas emissions, by mid-century at something like 85% reduction levels. And they're doing it through renewables, wind and solar and maximized efficiency and energy distribution, just like we're talking about here. So if the fourth largest economy in the world, Germany, can do this with so much less renewable resource than we have, then guess what? The United States could so easily do it if we chose to.
Well, I have to remind you, of course, that there was a genius on Fox, I won't call it news, and they were having precisely this discussion. And one of the brilliant energy experts from Fox pointed out that it's much easier it's much easier for Germany to go solar than the United States because they have so much more sunlight in Germany. What can I tell you? That one went viral. So, okay. So what we, and now, of course, solar is also booming in Ohio, especially in southern Ohio. There are big wind farms moving ahead. Rooftop solar isn't moving ahead as fast as we'd like it in Ohio, but it is definitely doable. So what we've established now is that Ohio not only has the capacity to produce all of it, well, at least to supplant anything coming from Barry and David Spessy with wind and, of course, with other renewables, but that the wholly owned legislature has aggressively stepped in front and prevented wind power from proceeding. Now, it goes without saying that the installation of these new windmills, wind turbines, would create thousands of jobs with many, many long-term maintenance jobs. And in fact, prior to the perpetration of the setback clause, there were $4 billion worth of wind farms proposed and really in advanced development for northern Ohio. $4 billion in private money poised to move into northern Ohio to build wind farms. And the setback clause has stopped that cold from happening. Okay, so now let's move ahead. Perry and David Spessy, which we don't need in any way, shape, or form, which are incredibly dangerous, and are money losers, although there's a dispute about that. But at a certain point, First Energy gave definitive shutdown dates of their own volition for economic reasons to close these reactors. But they were simultaneously politicking with the legislature to get bailouts, and they continually failed. And then finally they succeeded. And Pat, you're there in Columbus. Why don't you give us the grim details of what happened in the Ohio legislature in the past few months?
Well, I think one thing we need to do is talk about gerrymandering districts in Ohio, because
yes.
The Energy and Policy Institute in San Francisco has reported that First Energy spent $50 million to hire lobbying firms such as the Ohio Clean Energy Jobs Alliance, and they went out and they actually worked in the primaries to elect Republican senators and representatives in the Ohio House that would be favorable to them. It's a small amount compared to the $1.1 billion bailout that they were going to get. And then there was something like, it was reported, something like, I believe, $9 million in dark money to a company called Generation Now, and perhaps another company as well, to do these ads that that are coming up now. There were similar ads to the Chinese ads that are going out now against the repeal. There were those ads saying, you know, threatening all kinds of dire consequences and all kinds of increased taxes and rates if you're, you know, if this House Bill 6 didn't pass. And so let me say that First Energy also is not bankrupt, according to our analysis, is not losing. Davis, Bessie, and Perry are not losing money, and they're not going bankrupt because of that, because of those two plants, but because they purchased Allegheny Energy some time ago, and that's where their real losses are. So Davis, Bessie, and Perry are operating at a little bit of a profit. Maybe not enough for them to want to go through all the liability that they must think about, as they've gotten something like over a dozen exemptions from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission because they have not kept up and they can't afford to keep up these really aging nuclear plants. So they've got all this money, and so they had promised the union that they would honor the contracts, but Governor DeWine's signature on House Bill 6 had barely dried when they announced that they were not going to honor the union contracts. So it's really, you know, pretty sad what's happening.
Well, my understanding is that they voided the contract, the union contract at Perry and Beaver Valley in Pennsylvania, but left the one at Davis Bessie intact. Do you know anything about that, Pat or Kevin?
Well, I mean,
no. Okay.
Ironically enough, after the bill was passed by the Ohio legislature and signed by the governor, it was only then, after First Energy had convinced its workforce to lobby the legislature to save their jobs, that First Energy turned around in bankruptcy court and said to the bankruptcy judge, "Your Honor, we can't afford to pay our workers pensions." So that was quite the stab in the back. And that's the kind of, you know, behavior, you know, that you described earlier as mob-like behavior, Harvey. They're ruthless. They're ruthless to their own workforce who just helped them secure the bailout.
It's astounding. Astounding what they did. And I have to repeat this. In order to get the bailout through the Ohio legislature, the First Energy, which is about as fascistic a corporation as ever existed, recruited the unions, the two nuclear reactors are unionized. And, you know, I was in one of the committee hearings where a union worker actually started crying in front of the committee, "Don't lose our jobs at the nuclear plants." So, and it's pretty clear that the bailout wouldn't have gone through without union support. And it should be pointed out that many Republicans voted against the bailout, and the bailout, HB 6, would not have passed either house of the Ohio legislature, gerrymandered as they are. And I'll tell you right now how gerrymandered. If you look at the congressional delegation from Ohio, is, as everybody knows, is pretty much evenly divided between Democrats and Republicans. And the congressional delegation from Ohio is 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats. That's how heavily, and you have super majorities of Republicans in both houses of the Ohio legislature, even though in many instances in the statewide elections, a majority of the voters vote Democratic, you still wind up with a 12-4 congressional delegation and super majority houses of the legislature. It's outrageous. So the day, not even the day after, the very moment that HB 6, the bailout, passed the legislature, both the second house, with Democrat votes, couldn't have passed without Democrat votes, First Energy went into court and got their union contracts voided. So the unions, having signed up to help them get these bailouts, this bailout, immediately was stabbed in the back by First Energy. Just unbelievable behavior. So now it proceeds. And this group, and Pat, you and I in Columbus were scratching our heads, who are these people? But Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts, which clearly has a lot of oil and gas money involved in it, filed a petition with the Secretary of State, or is it the Attorney General? I can't remember which one, to have a referendum to reverse the HB 6, the bailout, right? And do you remember, Pat, is it the AG or the Secretary of State? Pat Morita? Oh, she's gone again. This happened before. We had Pat on, and her phone cut out on us, but we've had her for a while. So one or the other, and we'll proceed, Kevin, you and me. Maybe Pat will call back, and I guess Donna misread. Donna Gilmore, you're not on, are you? Okay.
Yes,
so,
I am.
Oh, you are, Donna. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been on for quite a while, yeah.
Okay, so you're getting informed here about Ohio, and we want you to chime in with us from California here. Okay, so the AG, I'm pretty sure it's the AG, sent back the petition with all these questions, and Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts came back with a revised petition, which was approved. What a miracle, by the Republican Attorney General. And he said, yes, this petition can go on the ballot if you get the signatures. Now, the utility immediately challenged this at the Ohio Supreme Court, which is 5-2 Republican. And they have said, and hold on to your hats, you know, there's no shame in Mudville here. They are arguing that, I mean, geez, these guys, they are arguing that the petition to repeal the bailout is illegitimate because the bailout is a tax. And you can't reverse a tax with a referendum. Now, I got to tell you, and Donna, you've probably gone through similar stuff here in California. In the debate in the Ohio legislature, the proponents of AB 6, the bailout, were vehement and very specific in saying this is not a tax. Because they knew politically that if it was been labeled a tax, it wouldn't pass. And there's all sorts of record in the proceedings on this HB 6 of proponents of the bill saying it's not a tax. In California referenda, have you run into anything like this, Donna Gilmore?
No, I did try and do a California nuclear initiative to shut down the reactors, but it's a real high bar in California. You have to have lots of money. And you have to have lots of people. They've made it almost impossible to use that process. So,
right, and it's
but
it's,
we have
it's
the Public Utility
all-
Commission that takes care of the private companies and force us. We have the highest electricity rates in the country, except for Alaska and Hawaii, because of our lovely Public Utility Commission that makes sure the private utility companies stay in business and make a good profit.
It's outrageous. It's really outrageous. And Mike Picker is gone, is that right? Michael Picker is no longer the chair of the California Public Utilities Commission?
He's not there. I forget the name of the person that took their place. I intervened in a public utility commission proceeding. It's a very painful experience. And
yeah.
The judge even said my case was meritorious, but ruled it out of scope. We're sitting here with more problems than I even knew about. And this morning I was at the Coastal Commission trying to educate them on what's really going on, because they aren't going to hear the truth from Edison. So that's...
We've had shows about this, Donna. We still have been unable to get even a response from the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, about whether or not we're going to get a state inspection of Diablo Canyon, which is clearly embrittled, cracked, and ready to fall right down into the one of the many earthquake faults that surround it. We've got no response from the state on this petition signed by Jane Fonda, Mimi Kennedy, Lily Tomlin, you know, you name it, in Hollywood. You know, I thought when Jane Fonda signed our petition that it was over and that the reactor would shut. And the governor, nobody, not only has the governor not responded, but there has been zero media coverage of our petition just to inspect Diablo Canyon. And I got to say, and this is quite amazing, and all, you know, I grew up in Columbus and then raised my kids there. And in all the years that I have done political work in Ohio, I have never seen a more unified, progressive response from the state media than we're seeing on this AB6 repeal. The state media, the Toledo paper, the Dispatch, most of the major state newspapers are against the bailout and for the repeal. I've been shocked by this. So, you know, it does give me hope that we can proceed. Okay, so we're really almost through the hour, but I want to make sure that we get a complete explanation here. So through this tortured process, where we now stand in Ohio, and this is incredibly important because this actually could impact the federal election. Are you guys still hearing me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to check because I'm getting a little action on my phone. Okay, so this could actually turn the presidential election because there is no doubt in my mind, and Pat, you're familiar with Ohio. There's no doubt in my mind that if this goes on the ballot, we will win. I mean, the people of Ohio absolutely do not want this giant rate hike to bail out these nuclear plants. Are you with me on that, Pat?
Well, they certainly don't. Of course, we can expect a barrage of if it gets on the ballot, and we hopefully do, and we hope that all your listeners from Ohio will get out there and look to be able to sign this petition. But we can expect a barrage of more Chinese conspiracy things coming out if it should get on the ballot. So we really need to be prepared to talk to our neighbors and so forth. First of all, about sign this petition, and then later, of course, vote.
Yes, and I want to encourage you, Kevin, and Donna, and everybody listening. You have got to go on YouTube, and I don't know, Google, whatever it is, search out Chinese opposition to nuclear power in Ohio. Find this ad. It is. I have never seen anything like it. It's right out of the Cold War. I mean, it's a Generation Now is the group that put it out there, or maybe First Energy Solutions. This is a 1-minute ad that you could not make up. I mean, it's so far beyond the Manchurian candidate. It's astounding. So here we are now. And where we stand in Ohio is that the ballot language has been for the repeal of AB6, the bailout of the two reactors and the two coal plants, has been approved by the state government, either the AG or the Secretary of State. I don't remember, doesn't matter at this point. So now 250,000 signatures, valid signatures or thereabouts, have to be gathered. And this is where the rubber has just, this is fascism, pure and simple. The group, Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts, whoever they are, has hired an army of signature gatherers to go around the state and gather signatures to put this repeal on the ballot. And a group calling itself Generation Now has hired another army of what they call blockers to intimidate and to interfere with the petition gathering process. In all my years, I have never encountered this. Donna, in California, in gathering signatures for various petitions, have you ever encountered a group that has physically confronted signature gatherers and interfered with the petitioning process?
No, I haven't.
Kevin?
No, and, you know, like I said earlier in the show, it's gotten physical, where one of the blockers actually assaulted a petition gatherer. So it's all about harassment. It's all about intimidation. It's all about confusing the public. And it's even come to the point of, you know, physical violence. And I think that's a part of their tactic. And somebody from the anti-bailout movement has pointed out, what are people going to do outside a library where this incident happened? If they see a physical altercation going on, do you think they're going to come over there and sign a petition? They're going to head the other way. And that's exactly what they want. They want to scare people away.
It's astounding. Pat, you're in Columbus. Have you got any? Have you talked to anybody who's had to confront this?
No, because I haven't seen any petition gatherers, and I hope that they are getting out. And we're kind of hoping that they might agree to use some volunteers. They certainly are. They're still hiring, so then they're paying a lot of money. So if you're maybe some of the listeners to this program will want to apply, and they definitely need more signature gatherers.
Okay, so you got to look up Ohioans Against Corporate Bailouts. That's the group that's putting the referendum on the ballot. It is, by the way, being still challenged in front of the Ohio Supreme Court. And the Ohio Supreme Court could yet rule the petition to be invalid, which would be, you know, horrifying. And then beyond that, but I got to say, I've been an activist, since the 1960s. 1962 was my first demonstration. I have never, ever seen or confronted a situation where petition gatherers have been physically assaulted. And I'm looking at an article here by Andy Chow on IdeaStream. I don't know what the actual publication is, describing a guy named Harold Chung who was assaulted by someone from this group. And apparently he tried to take her picture and she knocked his phone to the ground and smashed his phone, which means we don't have her picture. So this is going to have to start. Pat, in Columbus, people are going to have to start taking video of these stormtroopers who are out there assaulting people. I mean, this is the age of Trump now. This is as serious as it gets. To be in a country with a Bill of Rights where you have an organization hiring people to physically assault petition gatherers for a democratic referendum, this is something that is new. And really terrifying. So we're almost out of time here. Donna Gilmore, do you want to chime in on this and tell us where we're standing in California now, real quick on Diablo?
So there's a Coastal Commission meeting in Chula Vista in October where the Coastal Commission is going to vote whether or not to allow the San Onofre to start tearing down the buildings, including the spent fuel pools. So the spent fuel pools are the only method on site that if there's a problem with a canister, to replace it. And we have some 16-year-old canisters at San Onofre, and we know some of the readings are really high, and there are rooftop exhaust vents that will tell. The only way we know a canister is failing is if it's leaking radiation. That's the only technology they have. And they will not tell us what the radiation levels are on the rooftop exhaust vents. So I think they're hiding something. The same is true at Calvert Cliffs. They have the oldest canisters. So that's the only way we know. I was at the Coastal Commission this morning educating them on this issue. They don't have radiological jurisdiction, but they have a requirement that these containers must be maintained in a way that they could be transported away from a coastal rift. And they aren't meeting that requirement. But the draft staff report that the Coastal Commission has is giving them so many special conditions that it looks like the fix is in, and these utilities can pretty much do whatever they want.
Still haven't had a response from the governor on Diablo Canyon either. We're almost out of time, so I got to rush ahead. Thank you, Donna Gilmore, for that update. Okay. And I'm sure you've gotten an earful about how Ohio, it's absolutely hair-raising. Kevin Camps, where do we go with this?
Well, Pat Morita said, if you are in Ohio, if you know people in Ohio, just spread the word, get involved, help out with the petition gathering, and do everything you can between now and the deadline, which is coming up real quick next month, and try to get this on the ballot, because like you said, Harvey, chances are our side would win, despite the immense amount of money the other side's going to spend to deceive people. We'd probably still win.
Pat Morita, you agree with that? Oh, my God.
I agree. Thank you so much for having us and having this important discussion.
Absolutely. Shocking. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Crew in New York. And let's not let this go by. We got to win this one. No nukes, everybody. We'll see you next week in Solartopia.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna